From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 182 with guest Jeff Stokes, recorded Thursday, October 14th, 2010. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio. I am flying solo today. My friend Greg is off in the wild blue yonder battling security dragons. But let that not stop us today. We've got a great guest, Jeff Stokes. He's a field engineer with Microsoft, mainly Windows Server and client performance analysis. He does workshops on the topic. He's spent 17 years doing this kind of fun stuff. And he has a great blog called Dude, Where's My PFE? And that's Premier Field Engineer, I imagine. Welcome, Jeff.
Great, thank you.
So you're a Premier Field Engineer?
I am.
Well, we won't hold that against you. Actually, some of the smartest guys I know are PFEs. It seems like one of the better jobs at Microsoft.
It's a fun gig.
Yeah, just fighting problems day after day.
Yeah, and a lot of proactive work too, so you get a good mix.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. We were talking a little bit beforehand, XPerf. Have I not heard of this tool? What's XPerf?
So what XPerf is a tool that we can use to collect data from the ETW tracing that's built into the Windows kernel.
Okay.
So what that is the ETW tracing started to be put into the kernel in Windows 2000, and through each iteration of Windows since then, we've put in more and more instrumentation into the kernel. And what XPerf allows you to do is basically flag providers that are plugged into the kernel that, you know, say you want to monitor context switches, there's a trace provider for that. Or
right.
If you want to monitor processor activity, disk activity, a lot of the sysinternals tools are based on the ETW tracing in Windows.
Now, ETW stands for Event Tracing for Windows. And is this essentially the replacement for PerfMon?
They sort of work hand in hand, right? I would say that XPerf is kind of like PerfMon on steroids. But because of the size of the files that you collect with an XPerf trace, it would be difficult to do long-term trend analysis with an XPerf.
Just because that's not the nature of what it does. Is it just like too much information?
It generates quite a large file. For instance, the boot, depending on the flags you use, of course, the boot time of a Windows 7 machine could generate a file up to 600 or 700 meg in size.
Wow, that'd be fun to print out.
Yeah.
And that's just a boot. So literally you're looking, are you at the what is the CPU doing instruction by instruction kind of level?
Yes.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, so you can actually enable what they call stack walking, and with symbols you can go in and see what are we doing in terms of user mode processes, what's happening on our system.
So at what point is this the solution? When do you pull out XPerf versus PerfMon?
Well, one of the unique scenarios that we do in PFE, or one of the products we have, rather, is called WDRAP, the Windows Desktop Risk Assessment. And when you think about the boot process of a Windows machine, PerfMon isn't going to cut it for you because you're not going to start collecting that data until PerfMon initializes.
Right, it comes later.
Exactly. So what we're looking at is we can tell through XPerf providers, we can tell kernel, hey, when you initialize, start recording data into memory or start spooling it into a file. And then what we do with WDRAP is we focus on boot time performance analysis of the customer's build in their environment. And we can drill down with XPerf and say, well, you know, everything was going along fine in your boot process, but then we did DFS get referral and it took us 12 seconds to resolve that. You know,
right.
So let's look at your network topology. Let's look at sites and services. You can drill down to that depth.
So, but the thing is, the trick is getting down to that individual point. Like I need to know that thing.
That's true. It's not for the faint of heart. That's for sure. It has a learning curve, but really any kind of performance analysis does.
Right. And I mean, boot is obviously one scenario. Are there other scenarios where you need to get down this nitty gritty, or is Perfmon okay after boot?
It depends, really, on what you're looking for. If you've ever used or talked about the old tool SPA that we developed back in, I think, 2004 for Windows Server 2003.
Right. Server performance analysis.
Yeah. So SPA uses XPerf to generate those reports so that we can actually go in, you know, if we're doing, for example, the Active Directory provider in SPA, we can tell you what client is hitting your Active Directory LSAS process, what query is it doing, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's all done through essentially ETW tracing. XPerf gives you that kind of granularity that if you need to troubleshoot a particular process, you could go in and do that. We use it post-boot to analyze a lot of times what process is actually accessing what file on the drive.
Right. Oh, interesting. Yeah, because that's just not a level that Perfmon goes to. You can get down to a given process's resources on certain applications, but you couldn't figure that question out. What's manipulating that file?
Right. We can actually get down to, it did this many reads, this many writes, here's was its response time, you know, down each process into each individual file.
Yeah.
And we've actually uncovered some interesting scenarios through analyzing that where it's like, you know, you're booting up. Like one example I'll give you during boot is I had a customer that they had two different security teams that basically watched each other and watched the business. And they both used their own security product to do that. And you could see both of them coming up in kernel right when Windows initializes, and both of them were monitoring each other. And we suspect that that caused a lot of problems with the boot process, as you have these two system monitoring tools basically monitoring each other and monitoring kernel at the same time.
Yeah, that's starting to sound like it's eating an awful lot of the resources of the machine.
Particularly at boot, where those resources are precious.
Right. That's interesting. And just being able to visualize that here is the total footprint of this application, what it did.
Right. And really, you know, for a business like that, it's, you can do this. Here's the expense, you know, here's the cost of doing this.
Right.
If you want to do this, this is fine. You know, we'll totally support you in it. But if you want to have boot times that are 2 or 3 minutes, this is what you're buying into.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think that's one of the problems that we get to as IT folks. We get to a point where I can't clearly identify what the cost of each of these pieces is to actually break out, hey, a minute of this time is dedicated to this product. That's what's happening.
Yes.
These still sound like very specific scenarios. This doesn't sound like the sort of thing, you don't spin up XPerf for fun.
Probably not. I would say that if you're casting a wide net, Perfmon would be the way to go for starting your performance analysis, unless you don't have any choice because you're analyzing a boot or a shutdown scenario. They call it in the papers transition monitoring.
Right.
So we can monitor, you know, when does kernel go through its shutdown process and what's actually happening in that. You know, if you want to get granular in those types of scenarios, obviously XPerf is going to be the way to go.
Well, we haven't talked about this yet, but did, you know, how many machines have you seen that, you know, get tied up in the reboot that, and it's actually the shutdown that takes forever, can take an hour?
Yeah, we see that occasionally. Typically, it's with people running shutdown scripts to sanitize the workstation so that if someone gets a hold of the hard drive, they don't get any proprietary information.
Right. So actually walking the drive. That's something you couldn't see in Perfmon. Of course, Perfmon's probably already stopped at that point.
Exactly.
But back to that whole what was hammering on the drive thing. Mm-hmm. I've also seen this with problems with Active Directory where a machine just can't log out properly and the network stack gets hung for minutes at a time.
Yeah, and there's actually a network provider with Perfmon, or with XPerf rather, that you can go in and see what is happening in my network stack. What calls am I making? What sort of information is being requested? And you can see that through the individual processes as they make the network calls through RPC.
Right. So I'm getting a picture here that this is a tool that I go to when I have a problem. That Perfmon is something I can use for routine monitoring, System Center for routine monitors, all these different kinds of event monitoring already in place. And once we start seeing a particularly sulky machine or something nasty going on, then we might turn to XPerf.
Right, right. One of the other things just to highlight on is that the ETW tracing is also used. I don't know if you've stood up a 2008 R2 server, for instance, and given it the Active Directory role.
I have.
So when you do that, if you go into Perfmon, there's a data collector set for Active Directory.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of what SPA has sort of grown into, is that new reporting mechanism. And if you go into the properties of that Active Directory collector, you'll see that one of the traces it's doing is an Active Directory ETL trace.
Nice. So again, we've got this other tooling that's now depending on ETW, so we don't have to learn it directly.
Yes, and it generates a nice, pretty report in XML for you.
Yes, yeah. On one hand, I'm thinking the listeners don't need to touch this tool most of the time, that it's just something we're going to get to use on top of other tooling. But there are exceptions to that.
Yeah. I would say that if you're troubleshooting just some of the examples, responsiveness, slow boot, or particularly once you log in, the slow response time to get to your desktop.
Right.
What's gumming up the loading of my profile? You could also use it. I had a customer that had many internally built applications, and some of them, they took 2 or 3 minutes to start. And it's like, well, what is happening here?
And why is that going on?
Yeah. And so this is perfect, where you could actually take the symbols for this application, because it's internally made, and go in and load the symbols against a trace and say, okay, well, here's exactly what's happening.
And actually, I see that as a fairly reasonable scenario too, because often it is the operations guys that have to do the analysis to figure out why things like that are slow, and then bring it back to the app dev to talk
yes.
to them about, this is the impact we're having, guys, on these machines. Typically, it's because the hardware is different in production than what they tested it on.
That is definitely true, and I think that you really hit on a core point there, just in relationships in IT, is that the onus usually falls back on the platform's engineer
mm-hmm.
to sort of the burden of proof is on them,
Well, and yeah, ultimately it's they're responsible for operations, so they care how the software operates. But what I'm excited about here, I'm just sort of getting this feeling of, I can use this tool to create an empirical set of measures around the way that app is behaving, and then push requirements back to app dev to say, you need to fix these numbers.
Yes.
All right. This is where you're hanging up. I've got you, you're spending too much time scanning those files on startup or waiting for this unnecessarily. So that becomes actionable items for a software developer to say, you should not depend on this, or find a faster way to do that.
Right. Exactly.
Is there things that developers need to do to surface themselves well inside of XPerf?
Unfortunately, my coding knowledge is pretty limited, so I don't have much to say on that.
Okay, that's fair. And but it's an interest. I mean, for the most part, this is pretty low level stuff, so I think it's probably below the level of needing to code for it per se. We've seen those tricks done for Perfmon, where you can actually create your own counters for Perfmon to within your app.
Right. I would say that I think that I've talked to some people that have created their own providers,
mm-hmm.
That they've registered their own providers for their application. But typically you can find out by monitoring in the user mode space just what's happening in my user mode processes. Well, their app's going to show up in there.
And I mean, we certainly talked about how apps can show the relationship of what app is connecting to what files. Do you also break out information like that around the network stack? Who's holding open ports? Who currently owns port 80? That kind of thing.
It doesn't reveal it in that way for network. It definitely does for CPU.
Okay.
For context switching. For power transition states, things like that. One of the things that you look at that is very good to use XPerf for is analyzing DPCs.
DPCs?
Yeah, deferred procedure calls.
Okay, so what does that mean, a deferred procedure call?
A deferred procedure call essentially is telling the system that it needs to... In the way that you would view it in XPerf is a DPC, a deferred procedure call, would actually be telling the CPU to kind of take a break. The strict definition is that it's basically a deferment to require a higher priority task to execute and defer the lower priority ones for a later execution state. Now, the problem you come into in particular that I've seen is DPCs that get created that will cause things like audio that are running in the background to stutter because
right.
they're not considered to be important.
Yeah, I mean, technically, that's not all that important. Yet the user thinks it is. Like they don't like stuttering audio. It's not like it takes a lot of cycles. It just takes enough to not do that.
Exactly.
And so this is fairly low level programming type problems. But the fact that we could actually reveal the way that a developer is doing, say, asynchronous programming or multi-threaded programming and impacting this sort of thing is interesting. That's an interesting problem to actually say, hey, are you guys doing this? Is this your fault?
Yeah, and we see it a lot in poorly written drivers, you know, in particular, where the driver, thinks or takes a higher priority and ends up in audio is the common example for a DPC problem is the dropouts from audio.
Yeah, this is a level of analysis of a machine that, you wouldn't think when somebody brings you a machine and says, my music is stuttering, that you would go to this level to actually drill down and say, actually, the audio driver's crap.
Right, or the USB driver is, and it happens to be a USB audio device.
Right.
The network card is generating a bunch of DPCs, and the network traffic from an operating system perspective is more important and a higher priority than the sound driver, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. And again, if you're a device driver builder, that's an important thing for you to figure out, but the day-to-day IT, I don't think you want to get to the point where you're actually battling device drivers at that level, but I could see it happening.
Right. One would hope that the average IT person doesn't need to know. Level. Yeah.
You know where I actually could see that happen is in a specialized piece of hardware, like a scanning device or something that is, core to productivity for a given employee, and you've got some sort of set of bad interactions between the PC and that device.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to be able to look at that and say, why is this not working as quickly as it could?
Yeah, one of the tricks we can also do with XPerf, we can actually have it do a diagnostic and basically keep a circular file of that basically is logging in a circular mode. And when you have the problem occur, you can just run a command prompt to tell XPerf, okay, now the problem has occurred, stop, seal this file up and make it, a file that can be analyzed. And, that way you can sort of create a batch file with a, more statement or something like that, that the user, from an user perspective, you've got this tool, or even if you put a VB wrapper around it, you could put a button on it that says, when the problem reoccurs, just click this button.
And it starts capturing everything so that you...
Or it's capturing the whole time,
right.
And then you hit the button, and now you've got that recording.
You've left a mark of, this is when he noticed the problem, and you can presumably pick up on what that exactly is.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we get XPerf from? Is it actually called XPerf on the Microsoft site?
No, so if you wanted to get XPerf, it's in the Windows 7 SDK.
Oh, okay.
And when you go in and download the new SDK that includes the .NET 4 framework, one of the options on there is the Windows Performance Toolkit, the WPT. And XPerf is one of the tools, along with XPerf View, which you can use to view it in a graphic format. And then XBoot Manager, which is basically XPerf with the transition state analysis sort of built in, so you don't have to do a lot of command line switches.
Yes. So that's the part about capturing right on the boot or shutdown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, this is a whole site here just dedicated to, I did not know the site was there, Performance Analysis Development Center.
Yeah, and what also is interesting is you can actually take those binaries from the Windows 7 SDK and you can use them to analyze an XP or 2003 host.
Really?
Yeah, you don't get as much information in terms of stack walking and things like that.
Yeah, I thought that ETW basically didn't exist at the XP level.
Oh, there's still ETL tracing or ETW tracing built in,
right?
Because we started doing it in 2000. So you can actually, we use it all the time in WDRAP to analyze Windows XP hosts that have slow boots, things like that.
It's just not as grand. You don't have as many traces or points to look at.
Yeah, you don't, but it's still pretty eye-opening. Like, for instance, I was analyzing and you could have probably done this with Procmon, right, which is another ETW tool.
Right.
But I did a XPerf trace of a machine that was at a government facility, and we actually did a trace of their boot because it was taking like 6.5 minutes for a user to log in.
Ouch.
And what we found is that somewhere in their login script, they were running, you would see a CMD process, and then right after the CMD process, you would spawn a ping, and the ping would run for 30 seconds, and then it would spawn another CMD, and then another ping for 30 seconds, and another CMD, you know, and it just went on for like 2 or 3 minutes. And so then the question going back to them was, what are you doing here?
Why are you doing this?
You know, just work with me here. What's the thought process? Yeah. Why are we pinging hosts, you know, during a login process? And, you know, it, for all intents and purposes, it appeared that the hosts weren't even on the network anymore.
Right.
So, what, you know, are you trying to make it slow? I don't understand. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. He did everything short of just have wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You must have some great stories around the sort of crazy things that you, it's like cruft that builds up over time inside of login scripts and so forth.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think that, you know, moving into Windows 7 and group policy objects, group policy preferences, that we're really trying to get people out of the business of writing these scripts. I mean, I've been at places where the login script's 1,000 lines.
Yeah.
You know, and parts of it are there that people don't even know what it does anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I got to imagine you called out this. So why were you pinging hosts that don't exist?
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't get a good answer from them, but they remediated that. And then they actually had someone, I did all this remotely, and then they had someone come on site. Another thing that we've been seeing that I posted on my blog recently is about acoustic management in the hard drive. And you can actually see this in an ETAW trace, where the hard drive reports 100% utilization, but the IOs that it's doing just really aren't there to justify the disk being 100% busy.
Wow, that's weird.
And so what you see is that it takes a long time to boot. And what we found is that some of the older machines, and I've been working with customers, I also do deployment work with MDT, and I've had people that want to put Windows 7 on a box that's 7.5 years old.
Ouch. You know?
So we go in and analyze the boot time, and what we're finding is that some of the older BIOSes, particularly if they're not kept up to date, will have this setting called acoustic management, and it'll throttle the disk rotation rate down to basically keep the head from knocking.
Right. This is so, back when hard drives were noisy.
Exactly. And so what we're finding is that even if the setting is set for bypass, which intuitively you would think a bypass means don't buy into this whole acoustic management, what that really says is do what the disk wants to do. So if it's an older disk, the disk might want to be quiet. So if you actually move that to performance from bypass, I've found people reduce their boot times by over 100 seconds just by changing a setting in BIOS.
No kidding. But this sounds like this is an old thing.
It is. Yeah, it's like the new old thing, you know. I was doing some research on it before I posted my blog, and, you know, people were talking about this back in 2008, but it's just sort of something that either didn't stick or people forgot or just didn't think they needed to worry about it anymore. But as you have people trying to transition from XP to 7 and reuse hardware, you know, where they're doing a desktop refresh cycle of 5 years, you know, they may be running into this and not even knowing it.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting to see that we're keeping machines around in the organizations much longer than we used to just a few years ago. Like
yes.
The fact that they would have a 7-year-old machine, not that long ago, that would be incredibly shocking. But I'm just not that surprised by it anymore. There's a lot of old P4 hardware out there that still works, but it's old.
Yep. Yeah, I actually had to pull a fun stunt with MDT, just a little segue, I guess, where I had to go up to the Windows Update catalog and pull down a Windows 7 driver for this machine that it had to have been 6.5 years old, just so I could have a Windows 7 NIC that I could put into WinPE so that WinPE would be able to boot and run my task sequence to, you know, deploy 7 to it.
Yeah.
You know?
We get into this cruftiness. You know, there was an upside to when we flipped machines every 2 years. You just didn't get a lot of the buildup of crap that we've now got on so many computers.
It's yeah.
Old profiles and old driver sets and stacks of patches. It's frightening.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
It is a different set of problems. This acoustic management problem, and I vaguely remember back when we cared about how noisy drives are, and we really don't seem to care about that anymore.
But, well, I think the hard drive engineering has gotten better to where you don't need the acoustic management to not hear the hard drive anymore anyway.
Right.
You know, but those legacy settings stay around. In fact, I'm kind of a cynic, I guess, but I've found that some of the hardware vendors will actually post BIOS updates that It says, you know, a performance enhancement, you know, for applying this BIOS. And what happens is they actually took the acoustic setting out of the BIOS.
Right. And just, you know. Forced it to full speed all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Call it, well, let's face it. If you've got it set wrong, that's a performance enhancement.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. A little cynical there, Jeff, I think. Yeah. when is cynicism actually wisdom? That's
hard
what
to
I
say.
Wonder.
Yeah.
Any other favorite tales of ex-perf discoveries?
One of the other ones that's pretty interesting is in Windows, you know, if you travel a lot, every time you hit a wireless network, if you check that box to remember this connection, you can actually see this in the Windows trace where as Windows comes up, the network initializes, and then there's this long hang. So what we found is that if you have 80 or 90 or 100 profiles,
yeah,
for Wi-Fi's, then your Wi-Fi networks, what's happening is it seems to be enumerating each one of those profiles to see if any of them apply. You know, so if you go to a hotel once and you don't plan on using this particular Wi-Fi network again, it might be a good idea not to check that box to remember it, you know?
Yeah, well, and I've definitely taken an effort to go through. It's I find it sort of like archaeology, going through my Wi-Fi list at one point or another on one of my machines and just saying, wow, I've gotten around. How many different T-Mobile sites can you hit?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's worth ripping all of those things out. It's interesting how these features haven't been tested in depth. What happens after 2 years of using different mobile networks?
Well, it's also, you know, like I did I just replaced my hard drive on my machine, right? And I did a Windows Easy Transfer. My profile is 133 gig.
Wow.
What impact is that on my system when I boot? I mean, I know what it is. It takes me forever to boot my system, but you know, in production, you know, I'm willing to live with that because I need access to the data that I have.
Yeah.
And I understand the cost of it. But for an executive or a middle manager or something that has a huge profile, I mean, how do you as an IT professional address that issue? I mean, it's an interesting problem. And then it only gets muddier as you look at VDI or, you know, virtualization of the profile and, you know, do you have it roaming and, you know, all that stuff. It's a real interesting can of worms.
Well, and I feel like we're also moving away from roaming profiles for exactly that reason, that it's just, that's something that isn't sustainable long-term.
Yep. I had back when I ran my own consulting company, I had a complaint that one of my customer's users took a long time to log in, and he insisted on using roaming profiles so anyone could work in any workstation.
Right.
Well, this gentleman had filled the my music folder on his machine to where he had about 40, 50 meg free, and of course that was copied to the server, and it took him about 3.5 hours to log in. So. You know, yeah. You get what you ask for, I guess.
Yeah, you do. Well, and it just people don't understand the impact of what seems like a good idea. I'd like people to have their desktop follow them to any machine.
Doesn't sound like a good idea.
Yeah, doesn't sound all that harmful. You just got to be able to control that. And it's funny how this builds up. Well, if we're going to do that, then we've got to put tight restrictions on these things, and all in the name of keeping profiles at a decent size.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the jumping back to the performance analysis toolkit, the WPT, mm-hmm. or that's Windows Performance Tools, really designed to run on Windows 7, 2008.
Right.
Although you can go back and do stuff on XP as well.
That's right.
And it does have a dependency in the .NET framework, so that means the install is not a teeny tiny thing. There's a bunch of stuff to put in to get it running.
Well, that's not totally true. When you install the WPT onto your machine, you can just take the directory, and it's a portable app by itself. I've taken it and just put it on an XP SP3 box and ran XPerf and collected the data I needed.
Oh, interesting. So it comes in the SDK, but the SDK is a whole bunch of apps. Once you install the SDK once, you can pull out the piece you want.
Right, and what we've actually got guides on like AskPerf and you know other performance websites that will actually go in and say, you know, if you want just the Windows Performance Toolkit, you can uncheck everything. It used to be that the Windows Performance Tools or Toolkit was buried down, you know, in the check boxes.
Right,
and we fought pretty hard to get it some real estate up at the top.
Surface
and,
it.
Yeah.
That's good because now it's easy for us to just get at it on its own.
Yeah.
So if you understand PerfMon and you need to know more about a machine that's being grumpy, this is the place to go, the Windows Performance Toolkit.
Absolutely.
Jeff Stokes, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.